Open Arms frequently met and became friendly with boys from all boys schools in the area, including the Landon School, Georgetown Prep, Gonzaga High School, as well as our country clubs and other places where kids and families socialized. This is how I met Brett Kavanaugh, the boy who sexually assaulted me.
The U.S. Congress gripped by raw emotion, unlike that seen in decades. It's Friday, September 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernardi in Washington. We have a complete look back at today's Supreme Court hearing. Also, China slaps down talk of election meddling. And we meet a musician who lives the power of music. All today on VOA Asia. The Senate Judiciary Committee today was the setting for high drama as Dr. Christine Blasey Ford detailed her allegation that Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her back in high school.
I am here today not because I want to be. I am terrified. I am here because I believe it is my civic duty to tell you what happened to me while Brett Kavanaugh and I were in high school.
For his part, Judge Kavanaugh flatly denied any wrongdoing.
I'm not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. But I have never done this to her or to anyone. That's not who I am. It is not who I was. I am innocent of this charge.
Joining us now is VOA Senior National Correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, boy, quite a scene we haven't seen in some time up on Capitol Hill today.
Yeah, it was really high drama in the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was emotional testimony from both Christine Blasey Ford, the accuser, and Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee. And in his response, Kavanaugh at times was very angry about the allegations that have been made and talked about the fact that he thought that his good name and family now have been permanently destroyed by the allegations leveled against him.
We'll turn to that in a moment, but I have to ask, I don't know if this question is going to yield very much, but I've got to give it a go. What did we learn today?
I think we learned a lot about both of the individuals at the center of this drama. We certainly, for the first time, saw Christine Blasey Ford appear. I think by all accounts, she was very impressive. She was sincere. She came across as nervous at times, but that actually, I think, made her a sympathetic figure to people watching. And of course, we had Brett Kavanaugh firing on all cylinders, very angry at parts of his statement. Very emotional, choking up, talking about his family. So you've got now these two figures, and I have to wonder, how are we advancing the whole story here? We have heard from them. He obviously denied the specific allegations. She recounted it in her mind in great detail. And perhaps that's where the two camps lie at the moment.
She said she was 100% sure. He categorically and unequivocally denies any allegation of any sexual assault ever. So we're kind of in this rock and a hard place. Senators now are left with this task of trying to make some sort of judgment. On what basis are they going to do that? There was a lot of talk about, well, maybe the FBI should complete a background check. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. So what does the committee do from here?
Well, we certainly see the partisanship on display. We had a very emotional speech by Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican, defending Kavanaugh, blasting the Democrats. Democrats, for their part, say Republicans simply don't appear interested in a real investigation without FBI background checks. So I think what we're left with is, given this fact the Senate is so narrowly divided, 51-49 in favor of the Republicans, there's a handful of senators who have not declared where they stand on this nomination, and they will decide it. And I'm talking about primarily some Republicans who at times can be swing votes within the Senate. I think this will be determined by where they come down on who they believe or who they believe more.
We're usually talking about policy matters, but it seems the key point today seems to have been emotion. Are you How surprised are you at the level of emotion that this nomination seems to have generated?
It's like all the emotion in our politics, all the polarization we've seen building for not years but decades, has for this moment been shoehorned into this box. And we've opened the box now, perhaps like Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a full venting on both sides for a country that is extremely divided. And this may be yet the latest example where those on the Democratic side are going to tend to believe Dr. Ford and maybe not believe mm-hmm. Brett Kavanaugh as much. And those on the Republican side will do the reverse. They will be hanging with Brett Kavanaugh.
This just seems unfair to everyone involved, including the institutions of, say, the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Supreme Court.
Some people have been talking about this, some of the senators, some of them Republicans. The unsettling thing about all that is nobody seems to know how you stop it. Nobody seems to know how to reverse it.
Jim Malone, thank you so much.
Thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The third super typhoon in a month, named Trami, is heading for Asia, this time setting its sights on Japan. Multiple rockets hit the Afghan city of Ghazni Thursday during a visit by President Ashraf Ghani. Pope Francis sent a letter to Chinese faithful Wednesday, urging them to overcome past divisions. And the president of the Maldives has conceded defeat in Sunday's election, adding he would enable a smooth transition. Expanded coverage of these and much more on our website, voanews.com. China is rejecting accusations from President Donald Trump that Beijing is meddling in the upcoming U.S. elections, with some Chinese media calling the suggestion crazy talk and others noting that the remarks were just campaign strategy. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide tells VOA's Sarah Williams about Chinese reaction to Mr. Trump's claim.
China's initial response at the UN yesterday was a flat denial of these accusations. And they have continued to, at least officials have continued to kind of stress that fact that China does not interfere in other countries' affairs. At the regular press briefing for the foreign ministry today, that's what the spokesman had to say. Again, kind of reiterating what Foreign Minister Wang Yi said at the United Nations. He also said that everyone in the international community knows which country interferes the most in other countries' affairs. Obvious, he did not mention the United States by name, but that's clearly who he was referring to. And there was an emphasis, at least from officials, that the United States needs to stop slandering China and stop this kind of behavior towards China. This, again, kind of plays into this continual message we've had all along since this trade dispute has begun, that everything is really the U.S.'s fault. It's about the U.S.'s actions. It doesn't have anything to do with China's own economic policies, its trade practices, its cyber theft and IPR violations. So we continue to see a lot of that. There was also some, you know, lengthy comment in state media as well, or party-backed media. The Global Times had a story about what Trump had to say and his accusations that China was meddling in the midterm elections. The Global Times called what Trump had to say a sort of creative campaign strategy by trying to link China and blame China. But the Global Times argued that, you know, in this case, it said the White House needs to kind of take a step back and look at what's happening. And really, the Global Times argued that it's the United States' fault or the administration's fault for what is happening. And if Trump continues with his approach to the trade relations, that the midterm elections won't be the only election that is at risk. The article op-ed also suggested that Trump's reelection could be at risk as well. So all around, a lot of comment denying it. But at the same time, I don't really know if the comments, especially in the Global Times, were that assuring, because, you know, they said that if Trump does continue with what he's doing, that the Republicans are going to suffer, you know, that the people in the United States are going to suffer, almost, you know, kind of denying it, but yet also reaffirming that there's a connection there.
That's kind of interesting, considering China's, you know, a criticism of the U.S. trying to interfere in its internal policies.
Yes. Yeah. It's very interesting. And this whole China's non-interference policy over the past few years has really been going through a transformation, and more to the point that we're seeing China getting more involved. And as of recently, there was when we had this Africa forum, there was an official who also said that, you know, there are instances where China does have to get involved, and it does have to, he didn't say interfere, of course, because that's their traditional policy to not interfere, but China is interfering in many different ways. It's getting involved in foreign affairs of other countries and regions, and it's a fact. So to hear, you know, Wang Yi say that China has this long-standing tradition that it doesn't interfere, well, it's really not the case anymore.
Even though President Trump has been critical of China's trade policies, he keeps saying that he has a good personal relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping.
Yes, and yesterday he said that friendship may not be as good as it used to be, or it may be over, and maybe now he respects me. He did raise some questions at that press conference about the friendship and where it stands now. Yes, that's something that he has been saying for some time now. Whether or not that friendship can weather this storm is increasingly, I think, in doubt. And the events over the past week, really, and Trump's comments, there was a remark made earlier this week by the foreign ministry saying that, you know, we would like to talk, but we can't really talk with the tariffs that Trump has put on us because that is like a knife to our throat. So both sides are very, very much kind of digging their heels in.
VOA's Bill Ide reporting from Beijing. Happening now in Asia, Chinese universities are leading Asia's rise in global university rankings, although the top 10 list is still dominated by schools in Britain and the United States. China is leading the Eastern Hemisphere's surge, with one of its universities becoming the top institution in Asia for the first time. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. VOA's Greta Van Susteren told a congressional panel on Tuesday that Rohingya refugees are vulnerable to human trafficking, exploitation, and violent extremism. Van Susteren gave testimony at Myanmar's persecuted Muslim group at the House Foreign Affairs Committee in a hearing on genocide against the Rohingya. VOA's Zlatica Hoke reports.
Van Susteren visited Rohingya camps in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, just after the monsoon season in June. She said shelters were slipping away in mudslides, walls were collapsing over residents in huts, and even the basic sanitation was obliterated. Yet, an estimated 800,000 Rohingya refugees from Myanmar continue to live in those camps because they have nowhere else to go.
These people are forgotten. They're stateless, they're homeless, they're nameless.
Van Susteren urged the U.S. government to seek a long-term peaceful solution for the Rohingya people.
Left in these camps, long-term, they will lack economic opportunity, be it targets for human trafficking or exploitation or violent extremism.
Rohingya refugees who fled Myanmar in 2017 joined thousands of others in the Bangladesh camps who had escaped during a brutal crackdown in 2016. Two recent reports found that the government's violence against Rohingya residents in Myanmar's Rakhine state amounted to ethnic cleansing. The government of Myanmar denies any abuses by its troops and says military action in Rakhine state was necessary to uproot violent extremists there. But the latest UN and US reports say there is ample evidence that soldiers burned Rohingya villages and terrorized civilians. Pomper urged the U.S. government to pursue accountability for those crimes.
Congress can send a signal of support by sending a delegation to visit Rohingya refugees in their camps. It can ensure that the United States is funding humanitarian and development assistance at generous levels. It can fund efforts that serve the purpose of accountability.
The United States has announced additional aid of $185 million for Rohingya refugees. Republican lawmaker Ed Royce commended the administration for speaking up against the atrocities in Myanmar's Rakhine State. But Democrat Elliot Engel criticized it for refusing to recognize the authority of the International Criminal Court, which is mandated to prosecute war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Asia Pacific equities registered muted moves on Thursday, following from U.S. Federal Reserve's interest rates overnight. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve raised short-term interest rates for the third time this year, teeing up further increases for December. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great news. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. President Trump's accusation that China is trying to meddle in the November 6th midterm election is drawing a swift rebuke. The president referred to Chinese government-run media company's four-page supplement in Sunday's Des Moines Register in Iowa, explaining the mutual benefits of U.S.-China trade. Robert Manning is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. VOA's Victor Beatty asked him if this amounts to election interference.
That's absurd. The Chinese have been taking out these paid supplements for years. I get one in my paper, and I pick it up and throw it in the recycling bin. We have a commercial system. They paid for an ad. Wouldn't we be a lot happier if the Russians just paid for ads instead of trying to secretly influence events in the United States? That's really kind of ridiculous.
A White House official on Wednesday said the Chinese government's interference in U.S. politics, media, and business has reached, quote-unquote, unacceptable levels. Vice President Mike Pence due to make a speech on the matter next week.
They do a number of things to promote. They have Confucian Institutes that they fund to promote Chinese language studies, and they use it politically, no question. I think they try to use their market power to influence American businesses. You could say the same thing about the EU or Japan or other countries that we have put tariffs on that have retaliated.
Your organization, the Atlantic Council, put out an article which you helped contribute to. The headline, Mr. Trump accuses China of meddling in midterms, it's all about trade. Is that really what it comes down to?
Well, based on what Trump has said, yes, that was the evidence he cited. And I think there are lots of problems we have with China. And I think most of the complaints on trade that the USTR, if you read their Section 301 report on all the things China's doing that we are opposed to, I think I agree with most of them. And that the question is sort of how you deal with them, and there's a debate about that. But I don't think that the charges they're making about China, because they don't like what they're putting tariffs on, well, you should have thought about that before you started a tariff war.
There is a view out there that China is holding off engaging in any kind of negotiations with the U.S. over trade tensions because they're waiting for the outcome of the election in November. Do you agree with that view?
That may be some of their thinking. I don't see a lot of daylight between most of the Democrats and President Trump on trade issues, frankly. So I'm not sure how they expect things to change after November with regard to trade policies. I would be surprised if there were any major changes. I would have thought that their America watchers were smarter than that.
Robert Manning of the Atlantic Council. This news alert from VOA Asia. Afghanistan bowled India out of the penultimate ball of the game to earn a thrilling tie in the Asia Cup in Dubai. India, who had qualified for Friday's final, needed seven off the final over and one from the last two balls in a dead rubber Super 4 match. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. And now on VOA Asia, the late reggae musician Bob Marley once sang, "One good thing about music, when it hits you, you feel no pain." For a young Kurdish immigrant living in San Diego, Marley's observation rings true. VOA's Lukman Ahmad has this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Disability can slow you down, but art is limitless. Dylan Dadi is proof of that. The 17-year-old Kurdish immigrant lives and breathes music. He was born blind, but says the inability to see the world has never stopped him from enjoying the beauty of music.
When I was around 4 years old, I started singing, and I also would move my hands as I was playing an instrument.
Music teacher Grace Morrison says Dylan's musical understanding has been impressive from the very start.
I feel like I've taught him nothing because he just came in with this talent and he hears it and just plays it. His musical ear is just, you're born with it, and it's not something I can teach, but it's really fun for me to be able to teach him.
Self-taught Dylan plays various instruments, from drums, guitars, to pianos, and even the violin. Even as a young child, he has always been at the center of family gatherings and parties.
Music is my life. For as long as I can remember, I have been playing music.
Dylan's family immigrated to the United States from Syria to escape the war and also to seek medical attention for their son's blindness. Despite his handicap, his mother says she has never treated Dylan differently.
I never want him to feel different from his siblings. I always look at him the same way as his brothers. He needs more attention and care. I just wish his vision would come and that he can see again.
Dylan's father echoes these sentiments.
What is Dylan? Dylan means heart, and the heart wants a lot of things. But my son Dylan only wants two things, his vision and his music.
Dylan creates melodies and music based on his experiences in life. From the sounds of rockets and bombs in war-torn Syria, to the peaceful sounds of laughter and the ocean surf of his new home, Dylan is writing the melodies and the soundtrack of his new life. For Lukman Ahmed, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. Now, if you've missed any portion of our program, you can get the full program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can also find us at voanews.com. Now, we love hearing from you. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook and also our email, voaasia@voanews.com. That's VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We hope to see you again next week. And until then, have a great weekend.